So this is your scenario. Of course, with a mobile device, I mean everything, iOS, Windows Store app, whatever. So you want to integrate the following identity providers to make it easy to authenticate with existing social networks. So this is basically, you have a mobile device invoking your mobile service, and you want the mobile service to authenticate your user using, of course, the credentials against the available identity providers, so Facebook, Twitter, Google, and Microsoft. To enable authentication, you must register your application with one of or multiple of these identity providers. We'll look at this in a minute. You must also add authentication code to your application, but this is basically just one line of code. It's very, very easy, as we'll see. And when a user login is authenticated by mobile services, as we have seen in the scripts, there is a user object. So you have the user ID as a property of the user object. Now, the slides describes how the authentication flow actually works. So your client application, so the mobile running on the mobile device, invokes the login and with the authentication provider, like babo.azuremobile.net, login Facebook, or login Google, for example, okay? The mobile service, the client in this case receive a redirect. So the client is redirected to the authentication provider. And usually, as you will see, the authentication provider shows a form, like, you know, for entering credentials, username and password. And at that point, the authentication provider authenticates the client, the client credentials, and redirect the client to the mobile service with the authentication token. Okay. Now, this is the provider token. So this is the token that was issued by the authentication provider. The mobile service is going to return an access token that is the one returned by the mobile service. So there are, we have two access tokens. One is the one that the authentication provider returns to the client. This is sent by the client to the mobile service, and the mobile service is going to issue its own mobile service token. Okay. So I just want to show you this with using how it works using the browser. So let's do this way. First of all, let me show you that on the portal for this particular application, I integrated all of the identity providers. How you can do that? Basically, in the same way. So I'm just going to show you a couple, okay? Facebook and let's do Twitter, okay? So for Facebook, you just go to the developer's site. Of course, you have to subscribe. At this point, you click apps. You can create one or multiple apps. So in this case, I created this app. And as you can see here, I have the app ID and the secret key. So I have to copy this information, cut and paste this information in the management portal, in here, for example. You see it's 38, blah, blah, blah. It's a 38. And look at the secret key, it's 00F and 00F and so forth. Okay, same story for Twitter. If you go on the developer section of the Twitter portal, okay, you can go and yes, that's me, my applications. Okay, I defined two applications. So If you go here, you have to go to the OAuth tool. And here you have, you see, the consumer key and the consumer secret. You copy these two information and you paste them in here. And then you click the Save button, okay? And you are done. So let's look at Facebook. I say login Facebook. Okay. At this point, I'm not sure the authentication form just because my credentials are cached. Okay. Otherwise, I should enter stuff. Once I copy these. Now, the authentication token returned by, in this case, Facebook, okay, the authentication token, this is the authentication token returned by mobile service, not by Facebook. So this is the mobile service token, is URL encoded. So I can go here, cut and paste. This is just an HTML site that is doing URL decoding. So I said decode. As you can see, this is indeed a JSON object. I just need this piece of information to authenticate against mobile service. So if I come back to Fiddler and I try to do what I have done before with the other site called Plank, okay, so let's say I want to get data out of babo.azure mobile. If I click execute, I take an error, you see, because I didn't specify the application key and I didn't specify the authorization, the authentication key. So let's say xzumo out. So this is the authentication token, but this is not sufficient because I also need to specify the application key. Okay, so xzumo application. Let me go to the portal. Okay, let me do this way. Okay, yes, this is wrong, and this is wrong. Okay, and I need to go to the portal. Let me close this guy. Yes, leave this page, and manage keys. Oh, not of this, of this one. Manage keys. Cut and paste. Xzumo application, Xzumo out. Okay, copy. Paste. Execute. Oops. I still get an error. Why? The error. Okay, let me close and reopen Fiddler. There is some strange problem. Okay. Let's do this way and let me see if it doesn't remember anything. So let's try Babo, Azure, Mobile. .NET tables to do item HTTPS. Okay. Here we go. Okay, so this is to demonstrate how it works authentication. Now let's see how we can do this in the client code. Of course, you don't want to, you're not using Fiddler, of course. So, So it's at the end of the day, this is for the Windows Store app, but again, it's the same code for mobile, for Windows Phone, because the portable the portable library is exactly the same. So you just need one line of code, this line of code. Mobile service client dot login async. And then you specify which provider you want to authenticate against. So mobile service authentication provider, Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, or Google. So straightforward. I'll show you in a minute. So this is for the Windows Phone 8. Same story, it's the same line of code. In HTML5, this is a customization I did. So if you write to me, I can send it to you, but it's very straightforward. It's a customization I did on top of the quick tutorial that you can download, because I said I want to expose a combo box and I want to give you the ability to choose on the fly which authentication provider you want to authenticate against. Okay, so I created this. This is really a combo box. And this is the code. So if you look at the login, I basically use jQuery to get the selected value, Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. I take the value and I call the refresh, whatever, when done. But the only thing I need is to invoke the login. Just the login method with a value that is Microsoft, Twitter, or Google, or whatever. And when done, this is, you know, this is just jQuery, so it's a continuation. When done, invoke the refresh of display. And for logout, you just invoke logout. So let me show you this stuff quickly in the projects. Let's get started with HTML. So if I open this guy, and I open, this is the HTML page. You see I created this combo box. And in the, if we look at the logic, if we scroll down, you see this is the login. I just, you know, invoke the login on the client object. And the client object is created at the very beginning, mobile service client. So this is the effect. So if I, let me go here and say localhost, this one, you can see I can choose any of these. So let's choose Twitter, for example. Here we go. Or I can log out and I can enter with Facebook. Of course, it's a different user. So that the items are different. And let's try Google. And here we go. Okay, and of course, Microsoft. Here we go. Now, let's look at this for Windows Store app. So I open another project, mobile services, Babel, Windows Store app. So in this case, I just need, you know, if I scroll down, this is the code that is invoked when on the onNavigated to event for the main page, I just invoke this line of code, login async with the Microsoft account. So it's quite straightforward. Let me show you. Okay, now I have some kind of problems authenticating. So by the way, it's quite straightforward. Let me see if it works. The not this one. Sorry. Here we go. So this is the application running on the Windows Phone emulator. So let's And here we go. Okay, so it's quite straightforward. Okay, let's move on. So we already have seen this part. So before, when we look at the script to get the user name invoking, you know, the API, the REST API exposed by Twitter, Facebook, and Microsoft, and Google to retrieve user data. But just in case, as you can see, the user object has a different part depending on the authentication provider that was used to authenticate the user. So in you can use the getIdentities method to get this object. So if the user authenticated against Facebook, it will have a property called Facebook, which will be in turn a JSON object with user ID and access token. Same for Microsoft, same for Google. In case of Twitter, you have an additional information which is called access token secret. Okay. Now, we have seen this code before. This is the code to get the username invoking the REST API exposed by the identity providers. So in this case, I'm using the request object. I create a different URL depending on which identity provider was used by the user. And then I use the request object to make a call and retrieve the name of the user. Okay, so data validation and duplicate detection. So you can also do things. Let me show you this on the real screen, okay, because it's better. So for reference, you have also this stuff in the slides, but I prefer to show you this stuff in the script. No, PowerShell is not necessary. Great, thanks. So the insert script is doing really a lot of stuff. Okay, so the very first thing is to validate the text. I don't want to insert an item if the item text is now. So in case the item text is now, I just, you see, I use the request response with the status code bad request, and I return this message. Okay. Now, if I just want also to check for duplicates. I don't want to say to insert the same item again. So if there is an item with the same text and is not complete, I don't want to insert that again. Okay. So I'm going to use, as you can see, I'm using the tables object to get a table. Then I use the where. In this case, I check for to see if in the to-do item table there is a record with the same user ID, the same text, and which with the complete field equal to false. I read. So as you can see, in case of success, I run this function. If I get any results, this means that I have some duplicates. So in this case, I just want to return status code equal OK, because it's OK, there's not an error, but I'm not going to insert any data in the table. Okay. In order to insert the item in the table, you should call request.execute. That, once again, executes the default action for the operation. Okay. Indeed, I'm doing more stuff. If instead I have no duplicates, I continue with the rest of the logic. Now, we have already seen this, the get username. The get username is a way to invoke the identity provider to get the username and enrich the data the item, the record with the username, but also I will invoke the get user address, and we'll look at this in the next hour or on the last hour. I'm just invoking Bistol server running on my machine, which is exposed through the service bus to get the user address. So yes, it's now let me explain. And I'm going to publish this article next week because I didn't have the time to write to create an article with solution, but I'm going to publish this on MSDN Code Gallery next week. In a few words, the scenario is very straightforward. What about if I want my mobile service to be able to get information from the line of business applications running on my enterprise? Okay, so in that case, I can expose these line of business systems using the service bus, and I can communicate with them using the service bus. So we'll look at this get user address function in the next hour, okay? I just want to show you other examples. Let's say in the update, I don't think there is anything for this application. I suggest we move on so I can show you the notifications. So this is an example for duplicate detection we have just seen. Authorization, that's another interesting thing that you can do. Let's say that you have a permissions table. You want to, you know, handle authorization specifying in a table the user IDs and the permissions. So in this case, assuming that the user is authenticated, I get the table permissions, and I search for a record with that user ID and these permissions, submit order. Then I make a query, and I get the results. If the length of results array is greater than zero, it means that I found the permission record, and so I can say request.execute. That means I can insert that order in the orders table. Otherwise, I say, okay, man, there's no record. You are not allowed to insert any order. Okay, so I just say, I write in the console, user blah 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 attempted to submit an order without permission, and I respond with the status code forbidden. You are not authorized. Okay. Okay, let's look at the how to administer mobile services using Windows Azure cross-platform command line tool. So, quickly, you can use, you can't read anything on this slide. So you can use this tool to on the following platform, Windows, Linux, and Mac. So you can do things like, let me show you this stuff, which is because it's you can't really read anything from here. So, yeah, you can you can read anything on here. Same. So let me increase the font size. It's really the font. Consolas, Lucida console. I don't know. Let's see this way. Okay, let's try this way. Okay, I did my best. Okay, so you can do something like Azure Mobile. So if you do Azure Mobile, you have a list of all the things you can do. You can say Azure Mobile list, for example, you have the list of your mobile services. You see Babbo, Giro, Planco, Babbo's Bird, Pictures, whatever. You can also do something like Azure Mobile script. For example, Babbo, as far as I remember. As a list. List and then the name, and you should see all the scripts for the Babbo mobile service. But one interesting thing is Let me see if I can show these at least. Okay, let me see the syntax. It's Azure Mobile Script Download. Okay. So you can do something like this. Let me show you. You can also do like CD. Okay, and then I can say Azure Mobile Download, and then tables to do item dot insert dot JS. Let me see if it works. Oh, I wrote this the wrong way. Tables to do item dot insert dot JS. Let me try again. I probably wrote something wrong. Let me see again. Your mobile script download. Ah, yes. I forgot to specify. So let me do this. You have to say Azure Mobile Script Download, the name of the mobile service, and then the name of the script. Whatever. It doesn't work. No, anyway, let me show you that you can do this, and you can basically download scripts. No, in this case you are just.
So anyone can download scripts?
No, of course not. You are doing when you are using the command line tool, the cross-platform command line tool. You are before, and you are doing this just once in your life. You specify the subscription ID with the certificate. It's something that there is a command that you can set. You can get the publishing settings. You know, you can download the publishing settings. There is a command to point to that, and you are done. Of course, you cannot do this and point to the mobile service of anybody else and get this information. Of course not. Okay. I'm going to rush a bit because I want to make sure that we do everything, because we should start this now. We should have started this, so we had a little delay. So let's talk about push notifications. So as we have seen, you can configure push notification for Windows Store apps, iPhone, iPad, Android, and Windows Phone 8. Okay, this is a little confusing seeing it this way, but it's a very this is just the general architecture of the demo. Okay, so my demo, the Bubble mobile service, is doing this way. It's working this way. You can use HTML5, Windows Store App, or Windows Phone 8 application to send to store data to the to-do item table on SQL Azure. As you have seen, I can authenticate against all of the identity providers. I'm also invoking the get username in the insert script to get the username invoking the identity providers to enrich the record that is saved on the to-do item table. In the next hour, now we are going to see this part of the demo. In the next hour, we are going to see this part. So this part is notification, push notifications. This part is about integrating with Pistol Server. Okay, or any kind of line of business application exposing some kind of REST or SOAP service, any one of the two. Okay, so in this case, I'm sending notifications to the Windows Store app and the Windows Phone 8 application. Okay, as you will see, the code is give or take the same. It's a little bit different because the Windows Store apps and Windows Phone 8 are, of course, they are using different push notification services. So the code in this case is different, okay? But it's very similar. So, this is the Windows Store app code. You have to invoke this very short method, okay? Yes, create push notification channel for application async. Yes, probably the longest method name I have ever seen in my life, okay? Yeah, it's, but at least it's meaningful, okay? Yeah. At least it's meaningful, okay, nice. So, after you have done that, so it works this way. I want to get the channel, and then I use another table in my mobile service. If we switch back to the previous, you see there is another table called channel table, because when the Windows Store app application, so when the Windows Store app or the Windows Phone 8 app, they get a notification channel, okay, in order to be notified, they need to register to the push notification service. So they get a so-called channel, okay? But in order for my application, the mobile service, to be able to send notifications to those devices, my mobile service application needs to know the URL of this channel, okay? So my application needs to communicate to my mobile service this channel and say, hey, if you want to send me notifications, please store this information somewhere, okay? So I save this information in the channel table. Let me show you this. So, as you can see, I have a channel table, and these are the entries. So this is the URI of the channel, and I extended the demo that is in the tutorial, because I also added the type column. So MPNS stands for Windows Phone 8, while WNS stands for Windows Notification Service, so Windows Store Apps. Why I'm doing so? Because as you will see, in order to send notification to Windows, to each device, you have to use a different object, okay, basically. So it's important that I know the type of the device. So, basically the only thing that you need to see is this one. So I get the notification channel, and then I get a reference to the channel table, and I insert the channel in that table so that my mobile service knows me. And in this case, I'm also saying type equal WNS, okay? It's important that if you want to make your Windows Store application notification enabled, make sure you go to the application UI in the manifest and you set the toast capable to yes. This is done automatically for you in the quick start tutorial when you download the code, but when you are developing your application, make sure that you do this, okay? Okay. This is the code for the Windows Phone 8 application. Basically, as you can see, it's give or take the same, but the API is different. In this case, to get the channel, I have to invoke the HTTP notification channel.find to see if a channel already exists. If it doesn't exist, I create a new one. So HTTP notification channel, and I say open. And in this case, I also communicate to the notification channel which kind of notifications I want to receive. Because you can see I can bind the channel to receive tile, live tiles notifications, or toast notifications, okay? And then once again, I use get the channel table, and I insert an entry. So in my demo, I specify the URI, but also the type, MPNS. And again, also for the Windows Phone 8 application, you need to make sure that you enable the application to receive notifications. So in this case, you go to the manifest capabilities, and you need to check the ID cap push notification. So this is the server-side script that you have to use to send notifications, okay? I'll show you the demo, but this is exactly the cut and paste. So we can look at the code on the slide. So we have seen the table before with the URI of the channels of the devices. So it's sufficient that you do something like this. You invoke the get table on the channel table. You read, okay, let's say in this case, I'm sending a notification to everyone, okay? You could eventually extend this code to say, you could extend this table with a user ID column to say, these channels are associated with this user ID, okay? Just to say. So in this case, I'm sending to everyone. So I'm reading the channels from that table, and then I look at the channel type. So if the channel type is equal to WNS, that means that that is a Windows Store app. I'm using the push.wns, and then, for example, in this case, I'm sending toast notification. Right? As you will see in the demo, I'm sending toast notification. So I say send toast text 02. As you probably know, there are a million of formats that you can send for toast notification. So I just chose one of them. And in this case, I'm saying text one, new to-do item, this is the title, and this is the text which is smaller under the title. Same story for the Windows phone. In this case, I'm sending a toast. I can also send the time, for example. So for the toast, I'm saying text one, to-do list, and text two, the item text. Okay. So let me show you the demo. So I can. So now I'm using the HTML5 console, let's say application, to insert a new item. If everything goes as expected, I should receive a push notification here, and I should also receive a push notifications for my applications running, on my machine, like the Windows Store app. Okay, and I should also receive a push notification on this guy, hopefully. So let's do this way, let me see. Okay, so you see now it's go to Jupyter, also the live time notification. Let's see if it works. So I say, I don't know, drink some water. I need that. Add. Nothing happens. Here we go. Drink some water. We have a notification here as well. Let's see if... Here we go. You see, drink some water. Okay, so it's very, very easy. Trust me. The important thing is that... Let me show you this. For the Windows notification service, okay, let's continue because we don't have so much time. Okay. You have 10 minutes. So I'll try to compress this part. This is probably going to be the fastest presentation I ever done about hybrid solutions in my life. Okay, so... just setting the context, you know that today it's very, when we talk about hybrid solutions, that means that wherever they live, in any application domain they live, like on-premise or in the cloud, you very often need to access data and services which are running in other application domains. Okay? So, for example, let's say that you have to invoke you have to integrate with the line of business system of a business partner, for example, or you, as I said, I have an application running in the cloud and still I need to integrate with systems running on-premise in my corporate domain, okay? And that's exactly the scenario we are going to see. So the Windows Azure Service Bus is an internet service bus that offers, you know, both messaging and connectivity capabilities. So I'll go very quick, okay? The service bus provides two kind of messaging types. One is called relay messaging, and the other one is called broker messaging. Okay. The relay messaging is just a convenient way to create a WCF service running, for example, on-premise that exposes an endpoint in the cloud that can be invoked by anyone. Okay. So in an authenticated or anonymous fashion, it depends. You can configure that. So it's, without the service bus, you, in order to expose your services to the cloud, you know, you should have like a proxy server, you know, in front of that, in a DMZ, and decide which web services are exposed to a public address using some publishing rules, blah, blah, blah. When using the service bus relay messages, you don't need that, okay, because it's the service that authenticates against ACS, and then expose this endpoint, and the service bus, when receiving requests from client applications, can call back my service. Okay, so this doesn't require to open any port on the firewall. So this is instead service broker messaging. I'm not going through all the details because we don't have time. You can think at broker messaging as a sort of MSMQ or MQ series, you know, in the cloud. It's literally a messaging system. So messages are persisted to queues. Queues can have multiple publishers and multiple consumers. You can access queues using one of many APIs. You can use the .NET API. You can use WCF, HTTP, and REST, and 2 weeks ago, we announced the official support for AMQP, Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. So they provide lots of capabilities. So I'm not going through all of them, but you just have them for reference on the slides. You can use, of course, queues for any kind of decoupled communication where you want to send a message, but the receiver doesn't need necessarily to leave in that moment. So that the receiver can eventually, you know, come back 1 hour after and receive messages. Messages are persistent. They are in the service bus, they are persisted to SQL Azure. The interesting thing to mention is that service bus is also available on-premise, because we published in November the so-called service bus for Windows Server, okay? So, and the API is exactly the same, okay? So the service bus broker, the topics are like queues, but they can have multiple subscriptions. So when you publish a message to a topic, a copy is created for each of the subscriptions, and subscriptions have rules. So basically, you can decide using rules which topic, which messages you are interested in. Let me show you this. So basically, you can specify filters, expression like every message has a collection of properties that are custom properties. So you can define whatever you want. So you could say, I want just on a subscription level, you could say, I want to receive messages where ship country is equal Russia and ship city is equal Moscow. Okay, done. And messages are are represented by a class called broker message. As you can see, this class has a body, has a set of default of out of the box properties defined at the class level, like message ID, correlation ID, session ID, reply to, label, and so forth, so that you can implement all the message exchange patterns, but also provides a, a collection of properties that are like a dictionary. It's literally a dictionary of string and objects, so you can define whatever property you want. Service Bus Explorer is a tool that I did, is available on MSDN Code Gallery, so it's extensively used by everyone working with the service bus. I'll show you in a minute, but not important. What is more important, okay, is the code that you can use in a script to expose, to invoke, for example, as in my case, Bistol server, okay, using the request object. So, but any service. Let's say you want to invoke any SOAP service in over the internet. Okay. So what can you do? You can create the SOAP envelope. You have three ways basically to create the SOAP envelope. You can create this way as a string. You can use the XML builder module. And we'll see this in another demo. Or you can use the SAX module or the JS to XML. With the JS to XML, you create the... I didn't try this, honestly, so I'm not so sure. You should create this as a JSON object and turn that into an XML, but I'm not so sure it's working because there are attributes, so probably it's not working. Now, this is probably the important part, because this is a JSON object, the options, where you specify the method, post, the URL that you want to invoke. As you can see, in this case, it's just a URL exposed by my service bus relay service. And then I have to specify headers, like in this case, text, XML, the SOAP action. This is important, of course, because, for example, when invoking a WCF service, and the body. And we build the body in the previous page. Then you use the request object with the options that contains everything, so the method, the URL, the headers, and the body. And again, you specify a function that is invoked at the end of the request. So if there was an error, I call an error occur while invoking the service. Otherwise, this is tricky. I get the XML to JS because I want to take the response, which is a SOAP envelope, so it's an XML object, and I want to turn that into a JSON object. So I create a parser, and at this point I say parse string, and I take the body, which is an XML object, and if I'm successful, okay, I get the address from the JSON object. Because at that point it's really a JSON object, so I can, you know, get the address this way, navigating through the JSON object, and if the address is not null, I say item.userAddress equal address. Okay, let me show you this. So I don't know how many Bistol developers are in the room. Probably zero. No one is using Bistol. Okay, no worries. So you can see this receive location is just a convenient way, you see, to expose using the service bus an endpoint in the cloud. Okay, just so I'm not going through the details. I just want you to see that if I go to the management portal and I go scroll down to service bus and I access my namespace and I go to relays, I can see this endpoint. You see basic HTTP to do item. Okay, so in a few words, my script is invoking the Bistol running on my machine exposed with a WCF service at the end. Okay, this invoke some logic containing an orchestration. An orchestration is just a workflow, okay? And this returns the result to the script, okay? The result is just an address, a fake address created randomly, okay? So, if we switch back to the mobile service, this is the function that we have just seen on on the slide. So if I scroll down, you see get user address is exactly the same code. Okay, so let me see if it works. So if you go to date to do item, and I go to the second page and we try to enter another thing, please give me an address. Okay. Please give me an address. I click add. Okay. Notifications. I go go. Okay. If I go here and say refresh. Okay. Here we go. You see, I have a user address. And this was generated on my machine. Okay, so it's not important that you understand. This can be reused with any service exposed by your, it could be a CRM system, it could be SAP, it could be a whatever, okay? The other part of the demo is about sending a message to a queue. So this is my tool, the Service Bus Explorer. So I just want to send a message to this queue. Okay, so that is going to be consumed by Bstock, okay, in that case. So let me stop this receive location, because I want, otherwise the receive location is going to consume the message. So let's resend another message. Let me try to say go to Lisbon. Okay, if everything went as expected, I'm not so sure. See if I have any message. Not yet. Whatever. Let me see. Anyway, so the script should let me show you the code in any case. Okay. See, this is a send message to service bus. So in this case, I'm sending a message to a queue. So I'm using the create service bus service. Okay. I'm using the Azure module. Create service bus service. I need to specify the credentials for my namespace. Then at this point, I say create the queue if not exist. Okay. And then I specify the options for the queue. And once the queue is created, this is another way to create an XML document. You see, I'm using the XML builder. So at that point, I can do things like builder, create, to do item. This is the root element. I can use .l that stands for elements. So I can create the various elements of the XML message this way. And then I create the message itself as a JSON object. And I can specify the body. I can specify the message ID. And I can define, as I said, custom properties like mobile services and Paolo Salvatori. Let me show you if I have some messages here. Here we go. So if I get this message, this is in JSON format, okay, but you can understand that I can send messages from my scripts, server-side scripts, to the service bus. And then you can have an application running on-premise or in the cloud that is going to consume these messages. So you can look at, let me say so, you can look at broker messaging as a sort of notification platform, if you like, or messaging platform for several applications. Like, if you want to send a notification to a user, you are going to use push notifications. If you want to send a notification to an external system, you can use the service bus, okay? Okay, so let's move on. So this is the code that we have just seen. And we have seen the demo. Okay, we can make the break. Table storage. I assume that all of you know table storage, so I'm not going to talk about table storage, just a few things. So this is the scenario. It's exactly the same situation as before, but in this case, as you can see in the, maybe you can see, in the picture, I want my scripts to say to-do items to a table on table storage rather than on SQL Azure. And I'm just using SQL Azure for the channel table for push notifications, okay? So how can I do that? As we have said, you can, inside the service scripts, you can do whatever you want. So in that case, I never call the request.execute because I never want to invoke the default behavior, okay? So I'm just doing what I need to save and read data from the table storage. And I basically use the request.respond to send success or error, okay? So I think we can skip this slide if you know table storage, but two words on table storage. So as you know, table storage can be used for unstructured data in the sense that you can save records. Every record needs to have two properties at least, partition key and row key. So data in table storage is partitioned in multiple partitions. So the partition key is the unique identifier of each partition. You are guaranteed that every record with the same partition key is stored on the same machine. Okay. The second part of the primary key is the row key. So the row key uniquely identifies the record within the partition. Okay. So if you take the partition key and the row key, you have the primary key of your record. The important things to note is that the tables are schemaless in the sense that when you write a record into a table, okay, this record can have up to 255 properties, including the partition key, row key, and the timestamp, okay, but they can be anything. And the other important thing is that the records within a table, they don't need to share exactly the same properties. That's the point. They can have different sets of properties. So in a few words, you can use the same table, in theory, to save users and orders, order details, whatever. Okay. Now, this is the insert script, as I said, simplified version. But let's look at this in the code. Okay, so I copied here in the slide for reference, but let's look at the real code. So I have at the beginning data validation, and here, what do I need to access the storage? The table storage, I need to use once again the Azure module as we have done before to use the service bus. At this point, I invoke the create table service with using the storage account name and key. So just to give you an idea, I have, let's use Visual Studio. Okay, so as you know, Now, as part of Visual Studio tooling, you have also, in the Server Explorer, you have nodes for Windows Azure Compute, Service Bus Storage, Virtual Machine, Websites. So if I open my Paolo Salvatore storage account, under Tables, I have the table that is used by mobile service, which is called To-Do Items. Okay. So if we switch back to the code, the table was created by this call. So once I have the table service, I can invoke this function called createTable if not exists. Okay. And this is going to create the table. In this case, this is a little bit more complex, this code, because I'm also using retries. So I, as you can see, I define here the retry count equal 3, retry interval 100 milliseconds. And so I, before returning an error to the caller, I retry the operation. I use the set timeout. You can see the set timeout like the thread sleep, okay, in C#. After the last retry, I basically, you see, I respond with a bad request, okay, and the error message. If everything works as expected, at this point I want to check for duplicates, as I have done before. I can do this because I can query data from the table. So, in a very similar way as we have done before with SQL Azure, I have Azure table query. As you can see, I can do things like select from to-do items. To-do items is the name of my table, where partition key equal user ID, and the text is equal to the text of the item that was actually is the argument of this call, and complete is equal to false. Now, in this sample, I'm using the user ID for as partition key for the table. So all the entries for a specific user, they will be in the same machine, which is a natural choice, because when you read all the entries for a user, you want to read them from the same machine to speed up the operation. You don't want them to be spread over a million machines, okay? Once I define my query, I can query the entities. Okay, I specify here the query, so I call table service query entities, I specify my query. If the length of the entities array is greater than 0, it means that I have duplicates. And again, I return okay, but I don't insert the record in the table. Otherwise, I want to enrich the item. So I specify the user ID as a partition key. I create a row key taking, you know, the actual date to the milliseconds, not to the second, okay? And I use this as a key because I turn this into a string, as you can see. Oh, no, sorry. This is the created at, so this is a date. In order to get the row key, I create a numeric value this way. I get the time. The get time return the actual time at the milliseconds. I don't remember. The third or sixth, whatever, precision. So then I have text, item, text, complete. If we scroll down, then I call the insert entity. Okay, so the table service, when you invoke this method, is writing your entity, which is a JSON entity, to the storage table. And again, I have a retry count, blah, blah, blah. If everything works as expected, I also send a notification. And I send a message to the service bus. Okay? So this is basically the demo. So let's look at, first of all, with the HTML5 interface. So local, okay, local host, table storage. Let's log in with, I don't know, Twitter. No more. Okay, so I have some entries. You can see, go to the cinema, go to the conference, go to buy food, feed my rabbits. Now, let's... These are the entries. Go to the cinema, go to the conference, go to buy food, feed my rabbits. So let's try to enter a new one. Go downtown. Let's cross our finger, okay. I have, so now let's come back here and let's refresh data. Here we go. So we have go downtown, okay. Same story if I check this checkbox, this is going to set this item to complete. But before going to do this, let's try to modify the text. So go to the hotel. I don't remember what I should do. Maybe I'm invoking the update already. Let me see if I refresh. Here we go, go to the hotel. So, and again, if we look at the code for the update, it's very similar in the sense that I have the user. I presume the user is authenticated. So I use the partition key, you know, I look at the partition key and row key of the entry. If they are null, I return an error. So I make some data validation. And again, I use the Azure module, get the table service, create table service with my storage account name and key. And then I query the entity in this case. And if the entity does not exist, I return an error. Okay. Otherwise, I can also check if as the property complete and text. Okay, and if the answer is yes, I set entity complete equal item complete and so forth. And finally, I can invoke the update entity. Okay, so it's quite straightforward. So you have support for everything. Same for delete. Delete is even easier, you just call delete entity. Okay, so if I go here and I say, now this is going to complete. This is going to set the complete. So if I go this, this is going to set the complete to true. So I invoked, you see, complete is equal true. Let's delete the feed my rabbits. Here we go. So if I come back and I refresh, feed my rabbits is gone. Okay. So basically, once again, the most important thing is that you can completely override the default behavior of the scripts. And you can also store data to a table storage. You can store data, for example, also in blobs. But let me show you this. Let's talk about blobs. So this is a sample from Nick Harris. This is not my sample. So you can. So the sample you have seen now, it's on MSDN code gallery. And yeah, it's mine. OK. The sample you are going to see now is from this colleague. Okay, I also made a diagram for to make it more, it's clear, but you know, anyway, to describe the scenario. So first of all, share access signatures. When you want to access a storage account, you usually need to have the storage account name and key. Okay, now, it's not really a good, let's say that you want to use your mobile device to save an image to as a blob, okay, to a storage container. it's not really a good idea to hard code the storage account name and key in the application, because everybody can read that, okay? So it's not really a good idea. So you have two choices, let me say so. You could send the storage account key to the client application. It's not either a good idea, okay? Or for these scenarios, we provide a mechanism called share access signatures. What is a share access signature? It's just a URL that grants, allow restricted access to containers, blobs, queues, and tables for a specific amount of time. Like, use this URL to write your blob, and this is valid for 5 minutes. Okay? So, you can provide a share access signature to clients that are not trusted. Like, again, you don't want to give them the key of your storage account, okay? To give them temporary access to specific resources. So share access signature can be used with tables, can be used with blobs, containers, and queues, and now they can also be used with service bus. So for example, if you want to provide a temporary permission at an entity level, like I don't want you to have the credentials to write on the service bus, but I want to give you the possibility to send a message over a queue in the next 10 minutes, you can still use a share access signature. So a share access signature can grant any of the following operations that, you know, like let's look at the most important to us. For example, deleting, leasing, and creating a snapshot of a blob, reading and writing a blob, content, block list, properties, metadata, and so forth. So the list is very long. Let's look at the sample quickly. So the sample done by Nick Harris works this way. I have a Windows Store app that can be used to create albums and pictures. Okay, you want to use this application to store pictures to a blob storage. Okay, so you don't really want to, once again, to hard code the storage account name and key in the client application. So how can you do that? It works this way. The Windows Store app creates a new album, operation one, and the album is saved on a table called album table. Now, the mobile service inserts a new record in this table. Then the Windows Store app creates a new picture, that is you reference a picture on the local disk. And the mobile service calls the storage account. So this guy makes the call against the mobile service, calls the insert script. The insert script invokes the storage account to create this share access signature, which is a URL, as you will see in the next slide, containing the permissions. Okay? Now, this URL for both the picture and the thumbnail, okay, because you want to save both, is returned, okay, with the item. So the item has two properties, image URL and thumbnail URL. And these two properties contains the share access signature to save the image and its thumbnail to the container, okay? At this point, okay, the client application, in this case it's a Windows Store app, can independently and directly write the image to the storage account. Because, once again, the share access signature is valid only for 5 minutes. Okay?
And if it's not
valid? You can make it valid for 1 day. It's you. You can change inside the script, of course. It's configurable. So, this is, you know, I'll show you the code of the script, but this is the important part. So the insert script uses the following line of code to build the SaaS. So you have HTTPS plus the host plus the blob relative path, like, I don't know, container minus one and then the name of the picture. And in the query string, you have the SAS query string. So the SAS query string is composed of lots of parameters, Okay, so this is just a sample. So this is valid for the blob, for our scenario, okay? So the number and type of parameter depends on the storage resource, so container, table, queue. So in our case, the signature, a typical signature is like this. You have SE stands for signed expire. It's the time at which the share access signature becomes invalid. It's an absolute time, okay? So after this time, is invalid. Then SR stands for signed resource. B, as you can see, B stands for blob. C stands for container. SP stands for signed permissions. So in this case, I have W, that means write permission. And then you have a signature, okay? And the signature is used to authenticate the request made by the SAS. That is, I'm the script, I request a SAS, okay? The SAS contains a signature, so that when the client sends me the SAS, I can verify that this is really a SAS that I issued as a storage account, okay? So let me show you the sample. So pictures, I'll show you the script for the insert. I'm not going through the entire script because it's a little complex, but anyway. So again, here I have require Azure, require query string, yet another module. I use the account name and account key for my storage account. As you can see, I create a blob service instead of table service this time. I create a container if it doesn't exist. The container has the name of the album. And this is the code. So I create share access policy. If you go and, no, let's look at this guy. Create resource URL with SAS. This invokes another function called getSAS. And this is a little tricky, you see. Invoking query string, stringify, and I use the Azure object to create a share access signature specifying the account name and account key. This is the important part. So the script knows the name of the storage account and the key. And these two information are necessary to request for a share access signature, okay? And then, okay, I have to invoke this method on the share access signature generates signed query string. I mean, it's a little tricky, so I don't want to go through all the code. But the important thing here is that, let me show you how it works. If I go and open, what's the name? Upload blob storage. This one. Okay, so if I open, okay, so this is the code that is invoked when I need to upload a picture. So I get the table called picture. So if you go and look at here, we have two tables. Every picture is belong to an album, okay? And in fact, here you see album ID. So I get the table, and I call the insert async. Now the insert async is going to write the information about the picture in the table, but it's not going to save the picture to the blob storage. So as we have seen before in the script, Let me show you again. At the end, the code is going to return the URL with the SAS in the image URL and thumbnail URL properties for the item. So if you switch to the client code, as you can see, when I return from the insert async, the code is, you know, upload the blob, and it specifies, you see, the URL on the storage account equal to picture item image URL, and for the thumbnail, picture item thumbnail URL. But the client application, if you look at the code of the blob storage helper, it literally go to implementation. Oh, I have no idea why it is okay showing this here anyway. Let me do this way. Okay, so is the client application is literally using the client API for a storage account to directly write pictures to the container. So if I go to my, and I look at my containers, now you can see that I have two albums, my picture one and my picture two. So let's do this way. Let's run the application so you see the application in action, but it's not really important, honestly, but at least you have the clear perception that it works. Okay. It's reading information from mobile services and storage accounts. Okay, so don't remember is. Okay, so I upload a new image, so upload picture home. I don't know. Sky in the nature, and let's say bird. Okay. Back on demo, I upload the picture. You see, I invoke the insert async on the server script, on the picture table. Okay, now, if you look at the image URL, you can see this is the SAS, the infamous share access signature. You see paolosalvatori.blob.core, windows.net, my picture minus one, and then the name. And finally, in the query string, I have the share access signature. You see SE and the expiration date and so forth. Okay, so if I click F5, and click F5 again. Okay, now I have the bird. So if I switch to the blob and I refresh, here we go. I have my picture in its thumbnail. Okay, let's move on to the next. We have a few bunch. What is the scheduler is the last one? So, almost done. So, what is the Azure Scheduler? As we said, it's a convenient way to run some logic on a time basis. I mean, I don't really think I need to explain the why you should do that. So, for example, there are some example. You want to store a daily backup of MySQL Azure database to a blob storage. You could say, well, the SQL Azure database is copied three times in three different places, so it's already replicated. Why should I do that? The reason is because SQL Azure database, you know, is redundant and high available, but doesn't mean that you could screw up your data. You can do something stupid and write and you corrupt your data. Okay, so that's a reason. You could clean up your data once a day, or you could make some kind of analysis and you want to send a report. through the email, for example, using SendGrid, and we'll look at this. Or you can send a newsletter every day. So lots of scenarios. So these are the capabilities. Azure Portal integrating experience. We have seen this. You can also control the scheduler. You can create new jobs using the cross-platform command line tool. Okay, so you can do this from the command line tool. And so the actions can be scheduled to fire on a regular recurring schedule or on demand. And you can, of course, use the Node.js modules, as we have seen before. It's exactly the same. So let's look at three samples very quickly, and then we are done. So the very first is how to use a job to backup a SQL database. Now, SQL Azure expose a so-called Windows Azure SQL database import and export service, which is indeed a REST endpoint that you can invoke to say, hey, please go and backup my database to this storage account. And this service is going to create a so-called backpack file that contains a schema and data. Okay, so after that, after you created this, you can eventually use the management portal or the REST API to restore that database or on another database eventually. Okay, let me show you this. So the flow is quite straightforward. The scheduler invokes the job. The job invokes the import-export service, which read the schema and data and export these data to a backpack, to a container. So if we go and let me search for, I need to remember in which, okay, backup database. So I'm not going through all the details, but I just want to give you an idea. So here I can use, you can find these anyway in a blog written by Josh Twist. So I use the request module, once again, because I need to invoke a REST service. I use also the util module because I need the format method. Here I create the body. The body of the message contains the URI contains the URI on my storage account where I want to save the backpack. Okay, as you can see, backpack, and then these three information are the year, the month, and the day. Just to give you an idea, I should have a backpack already. So if I go to Paolo Salvatore, Globs. Backpack. Here we go. You see, this is a backup I've done in the 22nd. And then I have to specify the storage access key for that storage account, and then the connection information for my database. So the name of the database. The interesting thing is that the name of the database is not the database used by this mobile service. Could be any database I have on SQL Azure, of course. Okay, and you could also make a job to back up all of them. Okay, so this is the my password, the server name, and my username. And this is the URI that I need to send my request to. The URI is different depending on the data center. So these are the available data centers. So I post this request with that information. And if everything works as expected, I have a backup. So let me see. Let me run this once, not on a scheduled basis, just once. Okay, completed operation. It takes a little time to show up here. I'm not sure you can see here immediately. It takes a little bit more. about 1 minute or something. Here we go. So as you can see, I have a new backpack. Oh, now let me show you this because it's interesting. You can go to SQL Azure Database and say, I want to import, okay. At that point, you see, I have a backpack URL. I can select an existing backpack from one of my storage accounts. Here we go. So I select the one I just generated, open. Okay, and I want to save this on my account, choose a server, and click OK. Sorry, choose a server on, well, I don't know, on another server. Let's say West Europe. Let's see. And this is going to, you know, to recreate the database eventually on another data center, okay? So this is not important at the moment. So let me quickly show you the other two ones. The second one is send the report via email. So I'm using SendGrid, basically. So this is the code. Let me show you the code directly from the application. So Bubbles Bird data. No, it's this guy. Scheduler. Yeah. So in a nutshell, I'm just using the SendGrid module, as you can see. I'm reading data out of table storage. I'm creating a sort of report, and then I send an email. Okay, so let's run this guy and see if I receive the email. Let's do this one. Not yet. No. Anyway, usually it depends, you know, it depends on SendGrid. Maybe from in 1 minute. Well, let's check in 1 minute if we have the email. But the interesting thing about SendGrid is that you can also make the email fancier, sexy, in the sense that you can add you can specify a template, you can specify the, something on top or on bottom, like a footnote and so forth. So it's very rich, the SendGrid as a service, and also provides statistics and so forth. Last sample is a sample we have seen before. Basically is to send a service a message to the service bus. Let's say that every 15 minutes, let's say so, or something, I want to schedule an operation done by certain worker roles. Let's say you have a worker role, but you need a mechanism to trigger an operation every 15 minutes, something like that. You can do this way. You can send a message to the service bus and have one or multiple instances of the same worker roles listening on this queue. So this way, you are guaranteed that only one of these guys is going to receive this message. Okay. So just to give you an idea, let me see. Okay, send message to service bus. It's the code is pretty much the same that we have seen before. Let me just see in which, okay, this is sent to the scheduler, to the scheduler queue. So let me see. Okay. Ah, in the meantime, I received the email from SendGrid. So as you can see, this is the email sent by my job. And finally, if I go here and go to scheduler using my tool, here we go. I also have my message. Okay. Yes. Here we go. Yes. Today, you see. So I can double click and so you can use this mechanism to trigger some kind of events on your worker roles or whatever. So okay, so we are on time, which is indeed a very good news. So before closing, I don't know if you are going to receive these slides. Maybe you could, I don't know. They do not contain any, you know, NDA information. So you can ask, or you can send me an email and I will send it to you. This is my email address. So it's paolos.microsoft.com. Okay, so this is my email address. And I can send you So, once again, if you have an interesting project you are planning to do with mobile services, let me say that the mobile services team is really available and keen to get feedbacks. So you can also use me as a bridge to those guys, okay, to collect your feedbacks. And if you are planning to do something serious, I mean something, you know, a project that contains something really new and so forth, I can guarantee that the product group is very interested in this kind of project. So, and so these are the references, just a few words. So the tutorials, these are very well done, the tutorials. Here you can see the upload file to Windows Azure Blob Storage, the sample by Nick Harris that we have just seen. Getting user information is another sample that we have seen by Carlos Figueira. That it's very easy. It's how to use the request object to get the information out of Facebook, Twitter, and so forth about users, but also about any other. For example, you can also, for example, use the Twitter REST service to get the number of followers you have, for example, or the list of, or the one from Facebook to get the list of friends of a specific user, for example. Okay. Troubleshooting using the scheduler to back up your mobile service database, other information, blah blah blah, and finally these are the blogs of the most active people with mobile service. So Josh Twist is part of the product group. Nick Harris is a DP, so is an evangelist. And Carlos Figueira is part of the product group. And there is also my blog. So these are, once again, my contacts. So on Twitter, my account name is Babosbird. And this is my email address, this is my blog. So, guys, it was a very intensive training for you, but for me as well. So I really hope that it was worth it. I mean, worth of your time. Okay, thank you.